Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is Wednesday, May 20th. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2419A.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2419A.
Senator Shields moves to adopt the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 2419A. And can you just briefly explain the amendment?
Amendment dash A6 resolves a conflict if Senate Bill 230 becomes law. It repeals a section regarding healthcare, the healthcare workforce database, which lists specific information to be collected.
Okay, any more discussion? Any opposition? Adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2419A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Shields moves House Bill 2419A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Knoll?
Excused.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator Hayward?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Excused.
Chairman
Sanders? Aye. And I'll carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2419.
Yes. Are we working anything else right away?
We could. I hear that you
I've got to go testify on a bill first thing in rules.
Could we just work that one bill?
Sure,
real
that's
quick?
Fine.
Which one?
Absolutely.
3464?
3464. Well, that's we have to do a public hearing first.
Okay.
And do you want to do
How many people do we have?
How many are?
We
have one first.
One really brief testimony?
Yep.
Okay, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3464A.
Right. Chair Amanda Sanderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3464 and the dash A5 amendments. This bill directs the Oregon Health Authority to ensure pregnant women in Medicaid's fee-for-service population are able to receive timely access to dental care. And what it does is has OHA set
Did you
time
say
frame.
Your name?
Sorry, this is Laura Etherton with the Oregon Primary Care Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. This asks for the Oregon Health Authority, it directs them to adopt timeframes that are consistent with those that are already in rule for CCOs regarding timely access to health care, and actually adopt those similar consistent rules to the population of pregnant women who are in the fee-for-service population. This is important prenatal care, and we urge your support for the bill. And just to sort of cut to the chase, I think the key thing about the dash A5 amendments is just clarifying that the bill only pertains to the timely access for pregnant women outside of CCOs, since rules already exist inside. And they also do remove the provisions requiring initial dental screenings within 30 days. Want to recognize the work of both Representative Kenny Geyer and Representative Hayden for their work on the bill, and urge your support for its passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Okay. And you have an amendment, I hear.
Yes, I'm Senator Caden's House District 7, and if possible, we have a late amendment to this bill.
What does it do?
I support the bill. What the bill does is it basically brings equal care to pregnant women that are covered under fee-for-service with that of the requirements under the CCOs. What my amendment does is it's an amendment to that because of the relating clause, and this is my bill, it fits. It refers back to school-based health centers, and in 2013, House Bill 2445 was passed that required school-based health centers to notify parents of children under the age of consent, which is 14 and under, not only to have a consent to be seen at that school-based health center, but to also notify the parents after a child of that age frame had been seen. What my amendment would do, after doing some research on it, we find that the school-based health centers do use the global consent but those consents don't contain notification, and talking with people that work with school-based health centers, they say it's too expensive to notify the parents individually on each of those interactions. If a child comes in for an aspirin or something at a school-based health center, they feel like it's not important to notify the parent for that because of the cost, which I can understand. However, we did pass an administrative rule that says that they need to do that. So I tried to do this in a bill that had to do with school-based health centers, but the relating clause was too narrow. And since this was my bill, legislative council said that it could fit into this bill. So basically, it puts into statute, the amendment A6 puts into statute the exact same thing that House Bill 2445 in rule says, that parents of children under the age of consent, which is 14 and under, will be notified in the event that they access health care in a school-based health center.
Thank you. Well, because we were going to move the bill, and you just brought the amendment now, and I just heard about it about 10 minutes ago, why don't we think about this in another bill, or where there's more time to go over it, or 2016. Yes.
Madam Chair, I would suggest, are we amending it at all?
Yes, with the dash A5s.
I would suggest that there might be an opportunity in a conference committee.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I may, I appreciate the intent of Representative Hayden, and thank you for bringing this. I worry a lot about this and confidentiality for students, and I worry about an excess burden on our school-based health centers. I worry about kids not feeling comfortable going in, for one thing, if they don't understand the differences between what parents have to know about and what they don't. I appreciate your intent, Representative, I really do, but I think it requires a little bit more thought than we can do at this late date. I'd be happy to talk with you about it and work with you on a way to accomplish your goals without imposing an undue burden on everybody or limiting the likelihood of kids accessing care that they need. So I guess I'd be with you on this one, Madam Chair, with all due respect, Senator Cruz.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. We have the A5 amendments.
Madam Chair, we're in work session?
Yes. No. Seeing no further discussion, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3464 and open a work session on House Bill 3464.
Madam Chair, I'll move the dash A5 amendment into House Bill 3464A.
Senator Cruz moves the A5 amendments into 3464. Any discussion? Any opposition? Please note Senator Knope as excused.
You got to bang the gavel. Okay.
The amendment's adopted.
All those rules.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3464A as amended by the dash A5 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3464 as amended with the A5s into House Bill 3464. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
That time of session, isn't it?
Oh, God. I'm afraid I might do something wrong.
Aye.
Senator
Hill?
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Is there anyone that wants to carry this bill? Okay. Senator Shields will carry this bill. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3464. And I see Representative Kenny Geyer here. She's for which bill? 2024. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2024.
Okay. So I'm okay. My staff's going to let me know when they're getting our bill. I want to vote on it. Yeah, it'd be helpful. I could vote on it. Yes. You may need me to vote on it too. My staff says that they've just started another bill, and she'll let me know. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I'm really delighted to be here in support of House Bill 2024. I do want to just take a moment and thank you for passing the last bill, too. I want to give you a little context for the bill and then talk a little bit about the bill itself. One of my biggest priorities in the legislature is to support children's health, in general, women and children's health and well-being, but specifically children's health, and with a special focus on prevention since my background is in public health. And I'm on the board of Northwest Health Foundation. One of our three major priority areas is oral health, so we're part of the big oral health coalition that I think you will hear either on this bill or on other bills, some support for a number of different dental bills that the Oral Health Coalition has been focused on. We, as you know, had a big debate over community water fluoridation a little over a year ago. I think that was exactly a year ago. The primary, I think, was on my birthday, which is today, a year.
Happy birthday.
I think it was a year ago. And that's just to encourage you to support this bill here. But I think it was exactly a year ago, unless it was 2 years ago. But one of the results of that debate was it did raise a lot of questions about the high level of caries that we have in Oregon. And there was a real commitment by some of the people on both sides of that debate to say, okay, we really recognize there's a problem. Let's work together. If not community water fluoridation, what are some of the other things that we can really do to address this issue? And I really want to call out in particular Kelly Barnes, who was on the opposite side of that particular debate than I was. I was pro community water fluoridation. She was not. And she has done a phenomenal job joining the Portland City Club, looking at what are different ways that we can really address the oral health needs. And so I have worked with her and a number of different people. Pre-session filed a bunch of bills back in legislative concepts in September. We had meetings to go over this in December, January, and then early in the session to look at a whole number of bills. The previous one is one of them, and this one before you is another. And one of our guiding points was the strategic plan for oral health in Oregon that had just been published, as well as the City Club report. And one of the major things that this report goes into is not only what our dismal oral health results are right now. For instance, 58% of third graders have experienced tooth decay. But also it comes up with some key recommendations. And one of the four bullets on page one is Oregon needs a culturally and linguistically diverse workforce with expertise in reaching disadvantaged populations. Increasing access to care is not enough unless we address the economic and cultural factors that affect dental care utilization in specific communities. Disparities and inequities will persist. So this particular bill before you directs the Oregon Health Authority, in consultation with coordinated care organizations and dental care organizations, to adopt rules and procedures relating to training and certification of traditional health care workers, to provide basic preventative dental services to underserved children, specific required topics for certification and responsibilities of the healthcare workers, and it directs OHA to reimburse the cost of the preventive dental services provided. A lot of what this bill really really is directed at is making sure that we use the workforce that can be properly trained, as in the first tooth that the one of the Oral Coalition projects is the first tooth project that Tony Finch is heading up, and I didn't see whether he's in the audience here today, but it's training WIC workers and other to do some very basic oral assessment. This does not take the place of oral screenings that are done with people with a more of a dental hygienist background, but it at least gives people enough information to help the populations that they serve in a culturally appropriate way to let them know that they really need to go in for a more formal screening. It can deal with brushing and flossing. And they are actually training people how to do fluoride varnish as well, which is a very simple procedure. You'll probably hear more about it from Kelly. This does not include what kind of preventative dental services. It leaves it to the rulemaking. There are We were planning to you'll probably hear from some people some of the amendments that they would like to have. I am going to entertain different amendments, and unfortunately my accident kind of knocked me back a week. And there was a number of people who couldn't meet when we rescheduled the meeting for yesterday. So I am willing to hear some of the, you know, suggestions that people have. But I think this bill is 95% there. It's a very, very important bill in terms of reaching a population that is most at risk for poor oral health care. So I want to leave time for other people. I will mention that this passed unanimously both in the health care committee and in the full house in its as-is condition.
I did get the proposed amendment that you have submitted, and you're adding traditional health care worker and some other changes.
I'm not even sure if that's my amendment. I'd like to make sure I...
Oh, maybe that's Debbie
yeah.
Lawrence.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that.
So
later.
I'm not sure I'm in agreement with all of those. I'm okay. Eager to hear more about it. I really thank her for coming to all the meetings, as well as a lot of the different, you know, we had very robust group of people and different stakeholders at all these different meetings, but I'd love to take a deeper look at that. I know she did send it well in advance. It's my hold up, and I will promise to get to that as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, any amendments... It goes quite quickly if we send it through the chair, so that we can, anyone who wants amendments. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. George Okulich, Deborah Loy, and Kelly, is it Barnes? George, or who wants to go first? Kelly.
Good afternoon. Chair Monis Anderson and committee members, thank you for hearing my testimony regarding House Bill 2024. I'm very excited about the potential of this bill for improved oral health outcomes in our community. This bill was essentially heavily weighted from a Portland City Club research process, the Children's Dental Health Task Force, of which I was a member. What happened during that process is we interviewed many community-based organizations that represent children most at risk for dental decay. What we heard time and time again was that these organizational leaders, as well as these community members, desire that basic preventative dental services be brought to their community directly. They desire that these services be provided in a way that is culturally competent, and that they be provided by providers in the community that they have a historic relationship of trust with. This bill allows such a delivery of care. This bill now has broad endorsement from many community-based organizations, many statewide legislators, Multnomah County, NEA, Oregon Health Equity Alliance, Upstream Public Health, Northwest Health Foundation, Clackamas School District, and other CBOs are addressing it this week to consider endorsement. I've really been honored to work through advocacy through this bill with the Alliance of Representative Kenny Geyer, Upstream Public Health, and Northwest Health Foundation. One of the things that I really like about this bill is not only does it improve dental access for our most vulnerable children, it also allows a livable wage for traditional healthcare workers. These workers are very engaged in the community, and they desire to participate in the health and wellness of our citizens. In addition, when you consider the analysis through OHA, looking at the fiscal expenditures of this bill, they are considered minimal, and that the improvement of dental health outcomes will far outweigh any initial expenditures. Oregon Health Authority has essentially given it a positive endorsement. In addition to improving dental access for our most vulnerable citizens and allowing a livable wage for traditional healthcare workers, we believe and trust in the consultation process that Oregon Health Authority will have the ability through rules and regulations to provide training and certification. This consultation has been worked through to have participation from CCOs, DCOs, and the Oregon Board of Dentistry, and we trust that that process will work out any amendments through the certification process that are necessary. This bill is not meant to be a diagnostic bill. It is basic preventative dental services. They may include oral health hygiene, nutritional education, flossing and brushing, possibly education around varnish as a preventative measure. And thank you very much for the ability to testify. I'm needed in another hearing. I'll come back if there's any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Montes-Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okulich, here on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association, here in support of House Bill 2024, currently as is. We haven't seen sort of all of the amendments as drafted, so we'd reserve judgment on those when we see them. But we do like the direction that this bill has gone in, and we do appreciate Representative Kenny Geyer for convening a work group on oral health, and there have been a number of bills that have been a product of that work group. We continue to believe that all oral disease is preventable, yet, you know, the 2012 SMILE survey showed that 1 in 5 children between the ages of 6 and 9 still have untreated decay in their primary or permanent teeth in Oregon. You know, that's just shocking to us. And so we continue to believe that we need to invest more in oral health literacy in our state. So, and we continue to support legislation that does continue to fund and support oral health prevention and education programs. Like I said before, dental health is a preventative model, and more resources that are spent preventing disease, the more money we will continue to save. This bill continues to add momentum behind basic preventative services such as dental risk assessments for underserved children and reinforces the importance of such education. You know, having non-traditional workers do, you know, proper brushing of teeth, proper use of fluoride, proper, you know, flossing, all that type of education just goes a long way in continuing to make sure our kids have the proper oral health care that they need. And so we're here in support.
Great. Thank you. Can you just stay there?
Yep.
For the record, my name is Deborah Loy with Capital Dental Care, and thank you, Chair Montes-Anderson and the rest of the committee for the opportunity to testify. We are basically in support of this bill, hoping to continue to work on some amendment language, and as Representative Kenny Geyer indicated, there was going to be a meeting before this committee meeting that was canceled due to her injury. So I want to thoroughly thank Representative Kenny Geyer for her interest and enthusiasm and passion about promoting children's oral health and children's health in general. In basic concept, I think that the traditional health worker who has a defined role by for a certain scope of services, which includes outreach and mobilization, community and cultural liaison, case management care, and coordination and navigation and health promotion and coaching versus direct services, which I would not be supportive of them doing. I think speaking to those strengths that they're already called out to do and including oral health competencies in that mix is an absolute fabulous way to use the skills and the relationships that they have established with the people that they're working with. I also, in the amendment that I have asked for, though, would hope not to create a new organization to create the curriculum standards and certification standards for these workers, in that there is already an Oregon Traditional Health Worker Commission that identifies what those are to be. They do not do the education themselves. They just identify what the certification standards and the core curriculum should meet. So I would prefer that we use the agency and the organization that's already identified to work with these workers. One of the suggested amendment changes that we had asked for was, rather than to call these particular traditional healthcare workers out by name, we simply refer to the rules and law that already describes who they are. I did have an issue with one of the particular workers that was listed, which is the community dental health coordinator, which actually I'm totally on board with ODA's and ADA's interest in that person and position, but that's not a provider type in our state yet. That would definitely be a provider type that Senate Bill 738 or the pilots could pilot, but currently that's not one of the called out under the rules and our law, traditional health care workers. One of the other amendments that we had asked for was to just more clearly call out the kind of training we're looking at and the things that both Representative Kenny Geyer has mentioned and George, education on oral hygiene, diet, seeking the right kind of services rather than direct provision of dental services like fluoride varnishing or doing in-the-mouth risk assessments, I would be totally supportive of, as would our organization. The concern I have about people who are not healthcare workers being in children's mouths is they're not trained in infection control or health hazards. Neither are they under any board's responsibility should they not follow those kinds of infection control standards, which, you know, even some of my dentists, there are complaints that are given to the board, and the board researches those. The other part of the bill that I had an issue with was calling for specific payment of these workers. Right now, there is a payment mechanism for what they do. Adding an oral health component to that wouldn't necessarily add a requirement for organizations like dental plans to pay them for doing direct dental services. So I'm not opposed to them being paid. I'm opposed to mandating that they be paid if it's outside the normal mechanisms that they're being compensated for the roles that they're serving in now.
And I'm sure that Representative Kenny Geyer is listening to that. I think we would need to see the amendment first before we could really.
Yeah, and I think we were supposed to have a stakeholder group meeting, yeah. But that had to be canceled. So I hope to continue to work. And Representative Kenny Geyer has been great about trying to work together. Thanks.
Questions? All right. We will keep this. We'll make sure that we post it Friday so that we can continue its work in the future. And was there another bill you were going to testify on, Representative Kenny Geyer?
I think it was the one before I was in favor of. Do you have any other dental bills up right now? OPCA, did you already do it?
Yeah, they already did.
Yes. You already did the OPCA?
We did.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for passing that.
Okay.
But there's no other dental, those are the only two that you had on the agenda, right?
Yeah, now we, I think Representative Nathanson, is she? Yes, she is here. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2876.
Oh, 3376.
Is it? No. Sorry, disregard 2876. 3378A.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3378A requires hospitals to adopt written discharge policies. It modifies the definition of lay caregiver. It specifies topics to be included in the discharge policy, that patients and lay caregivers are provided instruction or training prior to discharge, and that the hospital notify the lay caregiver of the patient's discharge. It specifies policy requirements. There's no amendment and no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Shields. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. Today I'm presenting House Bill 3378 to you, also known as the CARE Act. CARE stands for Caregiver Advise, Record, and Enable. And the goal of this legislation is to ensure that family caregivers are included as part of the care team when a person is hospitalized. AARP Oregon brought this forward, and I'm supporting it because I feel it will improve the health of our patients, but also help the family caregivers in Oregon, help give them the support they need. Family caregivers are the core of our natural support system in Oregon, and they provide over $5.5 billion worth of unpaid care in Oregon every year. After a loved one is hospitalized, often their family members take on the role of caregiver for the first time and are asked to provide the care that they never expected they'd be in the position of doing. This care may take the form of wound care, medication management, physically transferring a person from a bed to a wheelchair, or other tasks. To do these tasks right, you need the right instruction, or the patient may end up back in the hospital with an infection or a medication reaction, causing more harm, more risk to the patient, perhaps more risk even to the caregiver, and of course costing more money as well as the personal pain and suffering. The CARE Act is a bipartisan proposal that will increase the likelihood that family caregivers can provide good quality care at home. It requires hospitals to adopt policies that will do several things. Identify if a patient has a family caregiver and record the contact information. Notify the caregiver when the patient is to be discharged from the hospital. And provide a demonstration of the care that that caregiver is expected to provide at home. Many hospitals are already doing much of this. This bill will ensure that all Oregon hospitals are working to involve family caregivers in the care of the patient. The bill is also crafted in negotiation with the hospitals to provide some flexibility and to take into account the acuity level of the patient and the needs of the caregiver. I hope you'll give this really serious consideration. I'm supporting this. I know it's well supported by many others. Thank you.
Wonderful. Questions? In looking at everything, there were a whole lot of people that signed up for it on the House side. We only have three people on this side. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
They're more popular.
No, it's all right.
That's because they know we always pass House bills. No reason to worry.
You'd be respectful of your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
With a couple of exceptions.
John Bartholomew, Robert Moore, Jessica Adamson. Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Bartholomew. I'm the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon, and we have over 500,000 members across the state of Oregon. So, obviously, we're here in strong support of House Bill 3378A, the CARE Act. We support this because we've seen a steady shift over the years in the role of family caregivers. Historically, traditionally, family caregivers have done those tasks such as bathing, feeding, preparing meals, going shopping, etc. And while that's something they're still doing, the role of family caregivers has over recent years dramatically expanded to include other tasks such as medical and nursing tasks that they was once only provided in hospitals. In 2012, AARP and the United Hospital Fund undertook a major study, online survey, to determine what kind of tasks family caregivers are performing. So we came out with a report called Home Alone, Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care. And a couple of the key points are that almost half of family caregivers perform medical and nursing tasks for care recipients with multiple chronic physical and cognitive conditions. So in many cases, it's providing care for somebody with Alzheimer's disease who then also broke their hip and went through the hospital system and then need to be cared for in that with the Alzheimer's as well. 78% of family caregivers who provided medical and nursing tasks were also managing medications, such as giving injections or administering intravenous fluids. And caregivers found wound care very challenging, with over a third wanting more training on it. And most importantly for this legislation, most family caregivers reported that they received little or no training to perform all these tasks. So then AARP Oregon followed up last summer with another survey just of Oregon voters over the age of 45, and we found that half of them have either already provided unpaid care to an adult loved one with needs or are doing it right now. And of those, 70% are doing these things like medication management and nursing tasks. So there's over 460,000 family caregivers in Oregon providing care valued at over $5.5 billion annually. And that's the foundation of our long-term care system, frankly. I mean, this is the unpaid care that if we were paying this, it would break the bank. They're doing great stuff out of love, out of compassion, and often out of need. So we need to support these family caregivers to ensure that we keep them out of more expensive level, or the patients out of more expensive levels of care, and also providing for the independence, choice, and dignity that our system is based on. So many of these family caregivers are thrust into this role because of an accident, a stroke, a sudden illness to take people by surprise. And very frequently, a caregiver does not have the tools they need. They've never done this kind of stuff before. And if they don't do the care they're expected to do correctly, they're likely to be back in the hospital with a hospital readmission, an infection, a medication reaction, many other possibilities, dropping somebody during a transfer. That's where this bill comes in. The bill, as Representative Nathanson noted, requires all hospitals in Oregon to adopt policies that address identifying and recording the family caregiver when a patient is admitted, notifying the caregiver the patient's been discharged or is about to be discharged, and based on the needs of the caregiver and the patient, provide a demonstration of the care that they are expected to provide at home. And that last piece is really critically important, because being shown how to do something is very different from being told how to do something. I personally have had to give injections to a loved one. And if I wasn't shown how to do that, I'm sure I would have either been terrified and refused to do it, or I could have done it wrong. Being shown how to do something is so much more important than just being told how. We feel like this really does address the triple aim of better health, better care, and lower costs when family caregivers have the tools they need to do this at home. And I really want to thank the representatives from all the hospitals who were involved in the negotiations on this to come up with something that is a compromise on both parts. The hospitals are very concerned about providing quality care and reducing readmissions, of course, as well. And they're many of them are already doing much of what's in this bill, and it's been great working with them on this. So now I'd like to turn it over to Robert C.A. Moore, one of our volunteers, who can express his personal story.
Chair, committee, my name is Robert C.A. Moore, and I thank you for letting me speak on behalf of House Bill 3378 and its meaning for my family and me. During the last 5 years of her life, I was my wife's full-time caregiver. I'm grateful to have had that opportunity, but it wasn't easy, and there was very little genuine help. This bill promises to make caregivers part of the medical team. If the hospital actually knows who the family caregiver is and is required to advise that person when discharge is coming, the caregiver is less likely to be left out. Requiring hospitals to provide demonstrations of expected care to the caregiver for the patient's benefit will mean that hospital providers will ask caregivers at some point, what else do you need to know? In addition to wound cleaning and catheter lines and shots and so forth, are other care tasks that many, if not most, caregivers need help with. Let me give you two pieces of needed information that, had I been given them, would have made a difference for my wife. First, in order to recover from her hip replacement, my wife needed to exercise carefully and actively, and I was given cursory instruction in what the exercises were, but no suggestions at all about how to overcome Alzheimer's-induced reluctance to do it. Watching providers work with her on occasions over several weeks, I picked up a few words and phrases, but nothing like the passage of this bill would suggest. Second, I raised no daughters and knew nothing of how to clean surfaces following a bowel movement. It was a mystery. Probably due to embarrassment or false sense of propriety, no one thought to say even what I learned later was classic instruction, front to back. Passage of this bill will save many women unnecessary bladder infections that made my wife's situation most unpleasant. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. It is takes an extraordinary person to be able to do the care that you did, and the more that we can help people like you, the better. So thank you for coming to testify.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with Providence Health and Services, here to testify in support of House Bill 3378. This is an important bill and one that we've been very pleased to work with Mr. Bartholomew and AARP, along with other representatives of the hospital industry, in support of this bill, and really to get to a product that we think is going to work for our patients and make sure that the level of care that they receive isn't limited just to the procedures done in the hospital, but really is the full view of pre and post and discharge planning that engages family and caregivers in that process. We are now held to standards to reduce hospital unplanned readmissions, and we think that's important. We think that's a key part of how we're going to improve the delivery of health care, and this bill helps to make sure that some of the best practices are enshrined in hospital policies and that we improve those over time. What we know is that the best discharge planning starts before the patient is admitted if it's a planned procedure, and it starts the minute the patient is admitted if it's an unplanned entrance into the hospital, and that we work to really understand the full picture of the family and what they're going to be going home to in order to plan for successful recovery. So thank you again to AARP for working with us, and we are here to encourage this bill to move forward.
Thank you very much. Questions? Hospitals? I see a thumbs up. All right. Any other questions? All right. I will close. Thank you very much for coming. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3378A and open a work session on House Bill 3378A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3378A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3378A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there... a clerk will call the roll, I guess.
Aye.
Excused.
Senator
Shields?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And even though Senator Canope is not here, he is signed on to the bill, and so we will ask him to carry the bill. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3378. And where are we now? Okay, I want to open a work session on House Bill 2934A. Zena.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2934A directs the Oregon Health Authority to convene a stakeholder work group to provide recommendations on operation of a basic health program. It specifies work group membership when the first meeting shall occur, and to develop recommendations to be reported to the interim healthcare committees. There's no amendment, no revenue impact, and a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Any discussion? We've covered this before. There's no amendments, you said? Correct. All right. Clerk will call the roll.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senators.
I think you'd need a motion.
Oh. Please.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2934A to floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2934A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yeah, our clerk will call the roll. Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2934. And is it 2876 the only one?
Who's carrying it?
Oh, Senator Denbrough is carrying it. And I close that one, and then we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2876.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2876A prohibits healthcare facilities from allowing a person without a specified qualifications and education to practice surgical technology. It specifies continuing education requirements. It provides an exception for healthcare facilities in rural or medically underserved areas of the state. It directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules necessary to carry out provisions of the bill relating to surgical technology. It clarifies the operative date for rural or medically underserved facilities. It sets July 1st, 2016 as the operative date. There is no amendment and no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay. Is it Don?
Streis.
All right. Patty O'Sullivan and Tara Cruz.
Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tara Cruz, and I am here in support of House Bill 2876. I am a certified surgical technologist, and I am here for 2876, which puts minimum educational standards in place for surgical technologists in Oregon. There are currently no requirements in place. I went to a program that was very heavy on both didactic and clinical time, and I did very well in that program. I can't imagine entering the operating room professionally as a surgical tech with less than that, even though right now in our state, brief on-the-job training can happen. As a surgical technologist, I'm familiar with many different surgical cases and the various techniques different surgeons may use. The preparedness reduces running for supplies during surgeries, which reduces room traffic, which is in turn linked to infection rates. My preparedness also reduces surgical and anesthesia time for the patients. I set up the sterile field as well as being scrubbed in and helping during the surgeries. My formal training did a lot to prepare me for this, which makes it no mystery to me that studies correlate lower infection rates with facilities using certified surgical technologists. That does not discount that there are skilled, experienced surgical technologists who were on the job trained, and that's why this bill has a grandfather clause to include them going forward. This bill also has language recognizing military training, and fun fact, that's where this career originated, is in the military. Additionally, continuing education is addressed. Maintaining certification already requires such, and keeping surgical technologists current in our profession reinforces our strength as a surgical team. It's important for an operating room crew to be a team, to have confidence in one another. And passing House Bill 2876 helps operating room circulating nurses, surgeons, certified first assists, and physician assistants know that they can count on the surgical technologist in the room. It also helps keep patients safe. Improving surgical outcomes and lowering healthcare costs through less infections and shorter operating times is a positive win-win. I believe this legislation hasn't happened before because patients didn't know that a member of the surgical team had no required training. There is currently a national trend to put educational standard requirements for surgical technologists in place, and I'm hopeful that Oregonians will be next on the list to have such assurances. Should anyone in this room ever need surgery, I wouldn't want them to wonder if the person charged with protecting the sterile integrity of their surgery, the person keeping their injections organized, the person handling the proper suture and implants to give to the surgeon, and sometimes the person with their hand literally on or in your heart, your surgical technologist, has any formal training. I have personally seen the need for this bill, which is why I got involved. And as a volunteer, I now recognize more fully how much goes into the legislative process. I have an increased appreciation for what you do for Oregonians, and as an Oregonian and surgical technologist and former surgical patient, I thank you, Senate Healthcare Committee, for your consideration of House Bill 2876, and I welcome any questions. Thank you very much.
Let's hear the panel.
I do not prepare stuff. I just come and I talk.
State your name.
I'm Don Dries. I've been a surgical technologist for 33 years now, I want to say. I started off in the military, like Tara mentioned, and I've seen a lot. I've seen technicians that are trained in the military who did well translating to the civilian sector. I've seen technicians that were trained from housekeeping, brought up to hold retractors, and it doesn't go as well. I think this is an important bill. I think you need to know that the person helping your surgeon has been through a program certifying that they know what they're doing. I've been overseas doing surgery. I've been here, and this is an important bill. It's a harmless bill, and it really is important.
Thank you.
I'm open to questions.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I, too, am here in support of House Bill 2876A engrossed. Let me just go over a couple of things in the bill that the bill does. Beginning July 1st, 2016, the urban and suburban hospitals will be required to hire only trained certified technicians. Included in that group would be, again, the armed forces, or if you got your training in the federal government, and the grandfathered folks that are already working in hospitals. We appreciate that grandfathering in. It also requires 16 hours of continued education every 2 years. Then the next thing is, what do we do about rurals? And that's where we sort of had an issue. And I talked to a number of our rural hospitals. I had conference calls with groups of people from the hospital in HR, the operating room manager, and the CEO to learn more about how they do things. And typically what has happened up till this time, both in the rural areas and sometimes in urban suburban, is surgeons say they like to train their own. They like to train people on the job how to be their surgical technologist. However, in learning more and more about this, surgical technologists do more today than they used to do in the old days. They'd like to have a close relationship and train them to give them the right tools at the right time, give it to me in my left hand or my right hand. But today they do much more than that. And so we saw the need to negotiate some amendments, and we have done that, and we support the A's. But for the rurals, what we're proposing in this bill is that we give them a two-year dispensation, and in that time, because in a Baker City, in a Klamath Falls, a Lakeview, Coos Bay, you normally want to get people from that area. Well, the only two places that you can get educated to be a surgical technologist today are both in Portland, Concord Private Hospital and Mount Hood Community Hospital. So what we're going to do in the next 2 years is get a prototype of a there actually is one prototype of what we're going to do, and it's for radiological technologists. It's run out of Lane County Community College. And what they do is they let you hire a person in your hospital or your ambulatory surgical center, and you train them on the job, but at the same time they're taking their classes at night, anatomy, physiology, all the book work that needs to be done at an accredited college. And it's a comprehensive program. The community college works with the hospital, making sure they have a proctor, that they have exams, that they're learning what they're supposed to be learning, so that at the end of that program, they have gotten the training required by this bill, and then they have to go take the test from the accredited testing facility. So that's sort of what we have in mind for the rurals. We have some community colleges that are interested in talking to us and putting that together. And then that way people can remain in their own community in the rural areas and not have to travel and live for a year somewhere else. And maybe for young folks, never go back to their community. This way they can stay in their community, learn on the job while getting the very needed education. So that's what's going to happen for the rural. So the rural doesn't start, a requirement doesn't start until July 2017. And then they have 3 years from the time they're hired by a hospital or ASC to get educated and get their certification. And they can work as a surgical technologist for those 3 years under this these parameters. So that was sort of the touchy part of the bill over on the House side. But we've all agreed on the amendments. We think it's a really good win, and that surgical technologists will be educated and trained and certified. And so we're here in support of this bill.
This isn't the first time this bill has come before, or this type of bill has come before.
Absolutely.
And I remember that the surgeons and I think surgery centers were not so in favor. And I don't see OMA here, and I do not see anyone from the surgery centers. Have they been involved in the
Chair Monis Anderson, they, of course, were, you know, when the bill was first dropped, were, I'm going to tell you kind of a, you know, it's not really that funny, but it's a story. It was dropped, and everybody was involved, and, you know, we were running crazy in the first part of session, and I know the Hospital Association had opposed this bill every time it came up. But I never handled it. Somebody else handled it. So that day, that person couldn't testify and said, hey, Patty, will you testify on this for me? I said, sure, send me your talking points. And so I got up there and I talked, and in the middle of my of my testimony, I kind of didn't believe myself anymore. So I was like, yikes. And so Doug Barber and I talked right after that and said, you know, maybe there's something we can work out. Let's talk about this. And OMA stepped up, Courtney did right at that moment, and said, yeah, I think we should try to figure something out. And then what really cued it to me to go negotiate this and write amendments was when I talked to Representative Bueller, who is a surgeon. And I said, well, I thought you guys like to grow your own. And he said, the only reason I like to grow my own is because the ones that the hospitals offer us are not very well trained. So that kind of cued it to me that we actually need to have, if we have better trained surgical technologists employed by the hospitals, then a surgeon doesn't have to go and not only train but pay their own. So it made sense. I think the time has come, and that's why we worked hard on this bill to get it to where we're all okay with it.
Well, I would like to get information from Asante and Peace Health to see where they are at. If we could,
Asante and Peace Health.
Yes. Or, get their.
Oh, they're not here.
Yeah, but, I know. So okay. We won't move the.
Sam. Can you present Peace Health.
fine, although, you know, I do represent all the hospitals, brought it to HALO, and have talked to all the hospitals about this, but
they've seen
it doesn't matter.
But you got a thumbs up.
Yeah. Well, I have some notes here, and I want to follow up with those and just to check it out.
Well, okay, and I know they were part of the conversation.
Initially, yes.
It was us three. It was Sean and myself and Doug Barber, who developed the amendments. So,
great.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you want to talk to them, that's fine.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Any other
questions? All right.
Good. Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2876. And did we get everything? We've covered everything?
No accession.
We've done everything. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.